for our visitors. Appreciate your presence today, tonight. And we're on chapter 5 in the book of Ecclesiastes, the preacher. This book of Ecclesiastes, I find very practical. Because Solomon, in his writings, inspired writings, talks to us about attitudes that he may have, and he has. Talks to us about attitudes and characteristics of people that he knows and has known. He talks about governments, the way people treat one another, good or bad. And these things that we can see in our lives. We can see in our lives every day. And maybe he comes at it from a little different angle, or an angle that you're familiar with. But when he discusses in these 12 chapters, he's talking to things that are important to him and important to God, but again, have a practical value for us. And we always have to remember that he writes these 12 chapters with the overriding view that it is life under the sun. Life under the sun. In other words, the physical life that we have each day. Now, he begins to talk about God and judgment and those things that God does by providence, where he provides those things in this life that we may or may not know about. But he provides for those things that are beyond this planet, that affect this planet, that affects our lives and nations. So God is involved. And as we've gone through the book, you'll see hints of that and some direct comments dealing with God of judgment and God's gifts for each of us. So, and in the end, there are four spots in the book, chapter two and chapter three, and one in chapter five, where he talks about in this life, yes, it may be short, but in this life we need to be appreciative of the things that are in our lives and the people in our lives, and how to deal with those things that we acquire in this life. So, and I think the word is joy. Have joy in those things. And again, appreciation for God has provided those through his grace. And we can get so wrapped up sometimes in this world that we forget, or we diminish the idea that we can have lemonade out of lemons. That we can do that. That we can enjoy a wife, our children. We can even enjoy to a degree the government that we're under. And count our blessings for that. So there's value in this book, under this book, that he wrote. And chapter 5, we'll talk about some instances that he has seen and he wrote down for all eternity. So let's begin with chapter 5. Chapter 5 is really where he's really starting to do a direct admonition about religious services, I guess you'd say, and religious teachers. And, of course, Solomon was very familiar with those things that the Jewish society and the customs and the religious acts that they went through, not to mention the priests and that sort of thing. So in that life, in that lifestyle, and in his knowledge, again, gifted by God, his wisdom, that he begins in chapter 5 with, guard your steps as you go to the house of God and draw near to listen, rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil. And that's verse 1. As he talks about guarding your steps, I wonder if we think about that, even in our life today, that we can be mindful or we can be careful in this life as we guard our steps day to day, day to day. We need to guard our thoughts because God knows our thoughts. And we're so blessed that when we err or we have some doubts, that we can go to God in prayer or we can repent or we can consult others to increase our knowledge and our wisdom. I know the knowledge or the wisdom that Solomon imparts to us in this book, he imparted in other books of wisdom. And we can, again, glean from those things that can help us in this life and this time period for our life here on earth. And again, he references that as life under the sun. And he uses a strong word, which is on the front of your book. You know, when if life here is all there is, and you're born, you live, and you die, what's after you? The life is all useless. The all life is vanity. The life has no profit, no advantage. And we are privileged today that we have in our hands the Gospels and the New Testament. And then we can look back in the Old Testament and see that, in fact, there is an advantage to living correctly and with the true hope that there is an afterlife. And when we think of Solomon and his view in here, he gives glimpses of that and, again, some direct comments. But, again, his comments revolve around how to live in this life. What advantage is there in this life? So in chapter 5, when he begins, guard your steps as you go to the house of God and draw near to listen. Listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools. He's talking about listening to those who would preach and teach what is right. And is that not something we need to think about today? Okay, when we go somewhere to a meeting, we consult our Bible, which we all have. We can consult older individuals who may have experienced the life challenges that you are experiencing, or even the preaching and the teaching. So those are the things that we need to draw near to. And the word is listen also. You know, we can listen, but I like to use a couple of words in reference to that. You hear and you heed. And that encompasses, I believe, the idea where he says listen in this verse, in verse 1. And the sacrifice of fools, you know, you can, and he's condemning those here that, what can I say? They do things as a ritual without really catching the meaning of their attendance at these religious services, that they lose the reverence for God. And that's don't listen. They don't really express in their actions and their thoughts the fear of God, which is respect. And so he's dealing with that here, that these people do not know that they're doing evil. Well, they know it, but it's just they view it as a mistake. They view it as something not that prevalent in their mind because they're thinking worldly things. They're thinking the ritual and the roteness of their religious services. So he's, as an observer in that, guard your steps when you start thinking this way. And we can get into that rut, can't we, sometimes? I've got to attend services. Why? Well, because that's what I do. All right? And again, an observation by this man of wisdom, Solomon, in his day that he observed. If you don't listen, does it cause ignorance? Yes. When you don't read Scripture and place that in your everyday life or make it a ritual in your life, okay, you lose the effect okay, and that effect that it can have on your daily life and how you affect others' life. So I see that as a good observation that he had. And even the people who don't listen, they really disregard the teaching. So that's an everyday thing for us. If there's any comment, yes, ma'am. Yes, we can. We can act like a fool, where these things in religion are not a high priority in our lives, or maybe the highest priority. And when there is contradiction of what's been revealed in Scripture, do we really care if we're just doing rote religious services? And we need to take these sort of things seriously and to heart because God has given us that ability to understand what he has written and what he has preserved until this day and until the end of time. These things written thousands of years ago, in especially Ecclesiastes, has application today. There may be a term here and there that we're not familiar with, but the principles that he's laying out is that enjoy life now, knowing that our lives are short, knowing that our years are short, that we have few years, and we can make an impact on ourselves and others that we know. So good advice that he starts with. In verse 2, do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in presence of God. For God is in heaven and you are on earth. He's dealing here with things that there's a little thought or a little depth of thought when you to make decisions in your life that are in reference to the things of God that he's revealed. And sometimes people, which he observed, people are going to be hasty in that. They can just kind of skim over the top. And there's depth to what God has revealed. Simplicity, yes, but also direction in our lives. So that some people just want to be hasty in their words and impulsive in their thought. And even to bring up, something that's it's considered minor can be a hasty thought. And maybe we don't want to do that sometimes. You know, a little contemplation and research and some reflection in our lives is good for us all the time, especially when we're thinking about the things that are eternal in today's life. So don't be hasty in that, which, again, he saw that. And this may have reference to he's going to come in with the idea of vows in a moment, in the next verse or so. And when we talk about vows, we'll get to that. Now, and it's at the end of that verse in chapter 2, it says, for God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. You know, sometimes we can have great word salads. And we can say a lot of words that compound one another to show how great we are. But as it says here, God appreciates lesser words. especially when they're from the heart and with the knowledge of Him in as the motivation for those words. And we can see that the Pharisees and Sadducees had a great higher view of people who had more words. And even today, when we see that in religion, if you watch national ceremonies on TV, or even sometimes on TV locally, there's a great, I guess, a desire to say a lot of words, where it could be said in lesser words. And again, with the attitude that they're promoting themselves and not the things that are eternal. So it's something, again, that Solomon recognized in that day. And as we end that up in that first section there, verse 1 and 2, you want your words to mean what you want them to mean. If you leave words that are ambiguous, especially when you're dealing with someone wants a decision or they want a good view of something, why be vague? Why be vague? God wasn't vague, okay, when He gave the instructions that He had, and we should live the same way. Be kind, but also get to the point. I don't know if that bears on the idea of vain repetition, but it could include that thought also, that he observed that when he went to the temple and he saw the leaders in that temple deal with the scriptures. Now, any thoughts? Okay. Now, in the next section there, beginning in verse 3, chapter 5, For the dream comes through much effort, and the voice of a fool through many words. Again, dealing with the idea of words, 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 words. And fools like to use those words. And my looking at that idea of dreams and that sort of thing, dreams, when you lose sleep at night, you're dealing with cares. Cares may not be valid cares. And maybe he's observed that in his life, Solomon has, that you stay awake at night and you're thinking of things and you lose sleep, and again, affects the body, and they're useless things that just keep you awake, and things maybe you can't even act on. Why think about things that you really can have no control or influence over? But he said, again, it affects your sleep, and dreams come from that. Now, and he says, a voice of a fool through many words. And, you know, this kind of confirms what we said up in verse number 2, that many words, especially if they're vain words, about cares and tensions of the day, whether in business or living or religion, those sort of things, they can disturb you. They can affect your day. They can maybe guide you in the wrong direction. But hopefully, if you do have some of those dreams and those cares in your sleep, you remember them. Maybe you can research them later on the next day and get some clarification on them. So just one of those things that he's observed when people deal with life under the sun. That life under the sun, whether it's acquiring riches, and riches is a lot that Solomon talks about, acquiring wealth. But people think a lot, okay, about their incomes, their investments, their things. And it does give you sleepless nights, especially if there's where you have the investments that's in some turmoil. There's not a lot of uncertainty. Not to say that you shouldn't consider those, but just, again, don't overly consider them. Now, in verse 7. For in many dreams and many words there is emptiness. Rather fear God. And that emptiness kind of goes back to our thought about if you have these many dreams, these many worries and desires that you're planning when you should be sleeping, those sort of things are empty. They really produce no profit under the sun. There's really no advantage in those. Because what are you dreaming about is the question. What are you dreaming about? And that's something we should think about too. I know I mentioned it before in here that I saw a post on Facebook from a preacher. And the preacher said when he's thinking about a lesson the next Sunday or the night before, he comes up with ideas during his sleep. Now, I think that's profitable. I think that's profitable. So that can be a positive avenue for that, too, for a dream. Well, just a side note along that. Okay. And, of course, fear God, respect God. And we're seeing in this chapter 5, we're going to see a lot about God in this. A lot of the previous chapters dealt with, you know, kind of somewhat to God, somewhat of a great being that by providence directs things and controls things. But he's going to start doing some things that directly relate to that supreme being, the Creator. And again, Solomon is trying to relate this to the ones that he is teaching with this. Now, in these verses, in the first 7 verses, fear God and pay what you vow. And he did deal with the vow. And I think I went over that. I think I missed that. Okay. But when we deal with a vow, like in verse 5, verse 4, when you make a vow to God, a vow is an oath, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools, pay what you vow. And verse 5, it is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. And that's sandwiched in the idea of speech. And if you, I'm looking for a 3-letter word, starts with an L. If you say, I'm going to make an oath to do something, and I'm going to vow to do something, and you don't do it. You consciously don't do it. Maybe you never had intent to do it. Starts with an L-I-E. Sure, you're lying to others, but you're lying to God also. And in this case, as Solomon saw vows and oaths of contribution. And that's not acceptable. You don't fear God if you make a vow or an oath and you don't keep it. And again, he says here, don't make the oath then. But that's okay. Don't make the oath. Don't make the vow. You didn't lie to God then. You didn't lie to others. So he's dealing with something practically that he's seen. And I don't know, maybe Solomon's done it that way. I don't know. But I wanted to sandwich that in there with the words. Any other thoughts on that? Okay, good, good, good. Okay. Now, in verse 8 through 17 of chapter 5, these desire for riches, and we've seen that in other chapters, and he's really bringing it out now, riches and wealth, riches and wealth. And I think sometimes people like riches and wealth because it's something tangible. It's something tangible that they can see in their purchases. They can see in the people that they have serving them. And yet wealth and also produces power. And that's why I think sometimes Solomon goes a lot back to the idea of wealth. Of course, Solomon was very rich, with untold riches. and power, being a king and all. And he had great influence over the, with his wisdom of all the other countries around him that they appreciated and I guess they praised him for his wisdom that he had. Now, in this 8 through 17, how does these riches and his desire affect life under the sun? I think we've kind of talked about that a little bit, that this desire in life for riches can overwhelm us. It can take us to places we don't want to go. It saps our time. It inhibits our sleep. It chooses who we want to associate it with, because your whole desire under the sun in this life, it may be to acquire those great wealth at the expense of things you should be doing and thinking about as priorities. And in 8 and 9, the two verses, riches is the reason for oppression and injustice. We'll talk about that, okay? Let me go ahead and read those two. If you see oppression of the poor, denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight. That's the way it is. It's something that's not unusual. It's something that's going to occur. You're going to see the poor, and you're going to see denial of justice and righteousness, in addition to the poor, to others, and we'll see that in a moment. And don't be shocked, for one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. He's making the point that this injustice extends also to these officials, that the ones over you can treat you in injustice and not to do righteous things. To be immoral, if I can say that, not to be moral. And so those are things that he's observed in life. Now, and he's placing riches is the reason for that. Again, in this chapter 5. And in verse 9, it's an interesting point, this verse, where he says, after all, even with the injustice and the corruption and all that, a king who cultivates the field is advantage to the land. That's an interesting verse. So there's something, in spite of the corruption and the injustice, that the land can give people. And I was thinking about an application today. In Ukraine, they produce roughly 10% of the wheat in the world. And it goes to many, many countries. And even with the injustice going on over there and the war going over there, despite those things, they're still allowing that to leave the country to feed others, most of it anyway. You know, with the ports, they had some issues with the ports to start with, but those are pretty well open now. So the land, even under an unjust king, can still produce those things that help people, the ones who are in, who are treated well. So it's an interesting point. Again, Solomon being a king. And so it still benefits all, that sort of thing. A good observation is that the earth will still provide what's necessary to live beyond the oppression. Now, verse 10, who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with his income. Back to the point. He's really reinforcing the other points. That even if you love of money, will not be satisfied with more money. Because it is a desire that just keeps on growing. And if I could, maybe I'll put in your power too. Keeps on growing. And you can see some kings, okay, in some countries in the Old Testament just wanted to acquire more and more land by force. And it's a desire, okay, to have more power and more money. Now, and this idea, nor he who loves abundance with his income. You know, this too is vanity. You can take that income and you acquire things, houses, servants, whatever it is. And again, Solomon talked about that in earlier chapters. But that's vanity. Because life under the sun, when you die, where does all this wealth go? Where do the things you built go? And it's all vanity, because there's no advantage for you especially. And we've seen in other verses where if you have this wealth and it's given to your offspring or whoever gets it after you, they probably won't appreciate what you went through to acquire it. Or they may be reckless with it, or they may want to be a chip off the old block and just make that the priority in their life, to take that wealth and build it. And if you're thinking material world, and you're thinking, that's what I want to do with my life, that's error. And we'll see in a moment that really affects the individual with that desire that he has. He or she. This too is vanity. It's all vanity. And the more you have, the more you're not satisfied. The more you seek, the more you're not satisfied. And that's the kind of people that he's dealing with here. And in verse 11 in chapter 5, how do riches affect life? How do riches affect life? When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? I've acquired these things, and I've built these houses, and I have these many servants. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? You've acquired it, and I've got this going. And where's my money going? Where's my wealth going? It's going to my servants. It's going to the people who work in the fields. It's going to maintain the house. So where's... I've got too many bills come due. And where is it? I've worked all this for other people, for other things. I'm a slave to the structure I live in. I'm a slave to those things I want to do or service me. So, and he says, that's vanity. That's just vanity. And that's something he, again, had to look at in his life. He just look on and see it being passed around. See it being passed around. And in verse 12, how do riches affect life again? The sleep of the working man is pleasant. Now, a little contrast is going to come on now. It's a good contrast. He's giving you some solutions here and things to think about. The sleep of the working man is pleasant. We talked about sleep. Your sleep can be affected by desire. But his is pleasant, of the working man. Whether he eats little or much. Again, how much does he have? But the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. The rich man eats and eats. He acquires, he acquires. He's not satisfied, he's not satisfied. And doesn't allow him to sleep. These cares and anxieties, the acquisition of more and more, gives him problems. But the working man, one who doesn't take this accumulation of wealth as his priority, sure he likes to accumulate, that's fine, but it's not the priority. And he says that man can sleep well, pleasant, when he sleeps. And a good observation that Solomon has here, again, I don't know if he's went through these ordeal or not, but what he says is truth, because again, these words are inspired by heaven. Is there practical application for us? Yes, there is application. Again, don't let these desires or things overwhelm you as being number one, every day. Yes, ma'am. Linda's making an excellent point that this application is a universal application to wherever you are in life. You know, you can see other people have certain things and you want those things. You can be one who wants just the basic necessities and you'll get it any way you can. And it overwhelms you. So again, the universal application of that. Good. Okay. In verse 13, there is a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun. Solomon's seen it. Grievous evil. And riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. When we say evil or grievous evil, we're not talking something that's necessarily sin at all. We're talking about decisions that affect one's life, that you can choose freely. But this evil here is an evil to him, okay, and the results of a bad decision. A decision of worldliness, of prioritizing wealth. And it's to his own hurt. You know, he can be hurt different ways. His health can suffer. He can worry to the point of hell, change your priorities. He can deal the idea that, you know, when he's hoarding this riches, what do you do if you hoard riches? You put a lot of security systems. You hire guards because you worry about thievery. So again, it's always on the person's mind. And again, Solomon was in a position to see this sort of thing. And that even to the point that it was such an overbearing thought that life seemed uncertain to him. Am I going to have what I have tomorrow? Am I going to have it next week? And you guard against that. And so life is uncertain. So the doubt creeps in your mind. Do I do the right thing? Am I doing the right thing to acquire these riches? Should I change things? So it affects his health to his hurt. And what's interesting, he follows up on that in verse 14 of chapter 5. when those riches, those hoarded riches, were lost through a bad investment, and he had fathered a son, which is an heir, then there was nothing to support him. It's interesting here that he's got these hoarded riches, and they're lost by bad investment, yeah. But also, and he fathered an heir, a son. Then there was nothing to support him. I take the him there to be the man who hoarded it. Because the heir may not be of that frame of mind to hoard. To have the priorities that the father had. Well, it's an interesting point that he is generational. Is generational, okay, in this hoarding. Again, any thought on that?
That would be reminding me of what Jesus spoke about in Luke chapter 12. The rich man who built who had all his crops producing, and he wanted to build bigger storage, and then he loses it, and he's a fool because he was rich. He was throwing treasures for himself, but was not rich toward God. And he goes on to explain about how God takes care of us. Don't concern yourself about the worldly things that they become your priority. You advise them to sell God to give to charity.
Yes. Excellent point, Josh. I know everyone heard that. Yes, Alex.
In my line of work, I deal with some high-end car dealerships and handle their recycle program. Just talking to a few of them. We're talking about, you know, Maserati, Mercedes, BMW. Yeah, told me 80% of the people buying these vehicles can't really afford them. They're just buying them because they're status and they make them look very important and very, and make them look wealthy. But a good 80% of them can't afford those vehicles. He said someone can really truly afford them can't really just come in with a check and pay for it and leave with the vehicle. And most of them can't. And I won't go into, you know, how many of them get repoed back to them and, you know, all these other things that happen. But it just shows that people worship materialism in this world.
Yeah, Alex is making a point for the audio that people take high-end vehicles or high-end houses or whatever it is, with the high-end jewelry, and it's for a status situation. And even though they can't really continue to pay it off, but it's certainly a status issue. And that goes again to the vanity that they have of their sales. But in the big view of things, it's a useless act. And one day they'll realize that, okay, that they still won't get what they're after. Won't get what they're after.
So busy saving up for a rainy day that we can enjoy today and we don't share to those around us. And so the rainy day sometimes never gets there.
Yeah, you save and you save for retirement. And I knew people where I lived in by Lake Houston. And they saved and saved and they built a house and, you know, and then after they built the house, a year after that, he dies of a heart attack. And again, they had the priorities for that, but they didn't have time to spend together, which they could have put the funds on that, because they had a great house before that. Again, those are personal decisions. Now, how much time? None? Okay. All right. And again, 15 and 16. Look at those. For your mother's wound and inner life. Just 15 and 16. And he had come naked from the mother's wound, so he will return as he will take nothing from the fruit of the labor and cared hand. And this is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus will he die. So what is the advantage to him who toils in the wind? That's right. You come into the world, you leave the world. Okay? The accumulation, the attitude you had, the life you had, the influence you had under the sun is gone. And again, that's a grievous evil that he came under, okay? And toils with the wind. Okay. Well, and again, 17, real quick. He felt imprisoned because of the life he had for that. And I want you to read 18 through 20 for next time. This is the conclusion. This is the point that we need to think about in our lives. And I won't be here next Wednesday, so Steve will be teaching something on that day. Thank you all very, very much.